Hey, Fuzz Butts, and welcome to another episode of Fuzzy Notes, the show about the music made by fill in the blanks. My name is Rue, and I will be your host as we listen to one person. That's right, I'm going to use the in the future talk again. In the future, you'll be able to head to fuzzynotes.org and listen to all the old CODA episodes where essentially I talk to one furry musician and we find out about their processes and their influences and their neuroses, and we find out a little bit about them while they talk about their music and their life and all that kind of stuff. Starting off with Colson back in the early days. I think he was the first one, of course, of Pacific Hotline. And also, what was the one? Polite Fiction. Sorry. So many bands fly through my head in a day. Sometimes grabbing the one name is a little difficult. And all the way through, we've talked to Pepper Coyote. We've listened to Party Wolf 17. We've heard from so many cool people. Acid Rain, of course. Fayette. And today it's time to talk to Husky in Denial. I'm not going to bury the lead because there's really no point because the name is plastered all over the episode. So I'm not going to pretend that I'm hiding that information. But as you know, the show has been experimented on a lot recently with guest hosts and new formatting and all that kind of funky junk as we lead up to moving the entire series over to the new host, which would be fuzzynotes.org. And today I'm going to do a little bit of the same. Normally when I do a CODA episode, which in the future you listen back, you'll be able to hear, I just sort of intro the artist, maybe blab a little bit, we hear the interview, and then maybe at the end I play a song and maybe give a bit more information. This time I'm going to go WTF with Marc Maron style. I'm going to talk a bit up front about things that are going on, and then we're going to get into the interview because there are so much going on. I don't want to hide it at the end of the episode, so I'm going to do a quick ramble at the start of the episode. Then we're going to hear from Husky in Denial, and it's a very cool interview. Did it a few weeks back, actually before he released the album, but that was before my laptop exploded. My laptop exploded. It was insane. Not actually. It wasn't a physical explosion, but it did explode, and basically it's been about 2 weeks in troubleshooting with the fine folks at Apple, finally ending up with me dropping it off at an Apple store and having the entire motherboard replaced. Now it's back, it's happy, it's fat and sassy, and I'm happy again because I live with my laptop. Now I have an iMac, which I've had for a long time. It was sort of my first introduction to having a nice big computer of my very own. And before you make fun of me about having Macs, it's not because I'm really much of a Mac fanboy. I do like them a lot, but I think it's because they do all the work for me and they're pretty, and I'm not really that tech a person. I'm not very techy, so when my old PCs would die, I would just like have a heart attack and I'd curl into a fetal position and have to beg my friends to help me. So my friends mainly were 50% friend, 50% IT professionals for me. And since I got this, it's been a bit less of that. I had some problems recently, but enough rambling about that. That's not what's important. The laptop's back, therefore the show is back on track. Yes, rhyming stuff. I'm going to talk a bit about a few things coming up. Number one, obviously, holiday music is in the air and will be on the show next week. So if you have a Christmas song, if you are a furry musician with a Christmas song, send it in to me, fuzzynotespodcast@gmail.com. Get in touch with me. And I'm also looking to have people tell holiday stories or anecdotes or just holiday shout-outs. If you have something you want me to put in the show that is holiday-y, whether that's New Year's Eve-y or Big Tree Gifty or Santa Claus-y or whatever floats your boat, or interests you for this particular holiday season, let me know through audio. Send it in to fuzzynotespodcast@gmail.com. And if you're a musician, obviously I'm looking for holiday music. I've got one or two on the pipe down, coming down the pipe. I don't know what I was about to say there, but I went with it anyways. And so that will be the next episode next week, holiday music. Also, a couple of interesting projects on the go. I talked last week a bit about And I've been talking over the last couple of months about a project me and Tempe Okun, or Tempo, who is the author of Six's Wild, which is published through Sofa Wolf Press, and many other things. You've probably seen his work around. We've been talking about doing a podcast that relates to furry music. And it sounds like it's going to be definitely a go. I shouldn't say it sounds like. We're already talking about how it's going to be put together. But if you are a furry musician and you're maybe interested in getting in touch with us and helping out, please do so. We don't mean to be nitpicky if you do contact us and we're like, this isn't quite what we were looking for, but there's a bit of extra information about this, let's just say, that has yet to be leaked. And I'm not going to say it right now. So we're being a little picky about who does the music and who helps us out. And there's going to be a very cool project involved. So if you are really interested in being creative with your music, don't hesitate to get in touch with me. Also, fuzzynotespodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter, Potteroo. That's a good way to get in touch with me. The other project that is coming up is that one I have been dubbing This Furry Life, and that is definitely not the name of the podcast. That's sort of the working title, just to get the idea across, which is This American Life with Furry Stories. I've got about 16 people who have shown interest, and actually today, the fine folks at the Risk podcast, if you listen to that show, which is really cool, it's people telling stories that they never thought they'd tell. It gets very dirty and it's a lot of fun, including the host, Kevin Allison. They retweeted a tweet about This Furry Life, this podcast project that I'm trying to get started, which was very cool, considering that, like, yesterday I was listening to an episode of Risk, and I listen to Risk every week, so to have the Risk folks essentially say, hey, there's a shout out for a podcast that's like This American Life but for furries, check it out, was very humbling. And I have to thank Dog Patch Press for that, because their tweet was the one that got retweeted. They tagged Ira Glass and Kevin Allison and stuff like that. So yeah, it's definitely on the go. I think I'm going to slow down the shout outs for asking for help, because help is rolling through the door. And now that I have the laptop back, I'm definitely going to be getting on that. So keep an ear out. In 2015, I'm really taking this one a bit slow. I want to build up an episode and see if we can get this going, but it'll be very cool. Furries telling stories about furries, and not like conversational, like a narrative thing where we're actually going to go out and get interviews with people. This isn't just friends talking to friends. I'm really excited about the idea of calling somebody I've never talked to before and finding out about their corner of the furry universe and a story, building a story about who we are. I went on that rant a few times before that I love our culture and I love our community, so I'm not going to do it again now because I do that way too often. Okay, one last thing before we get to Husky in Denial. I'm sorry, this isn't very what WTF with Mark Maron. I have yet to talk about my cat. I have a cat named Minion. Next, John Lennon Scholarship. I just found this out and I thought I would pass this on because it's kind of cool. I put the link in the show notes, but there is a scholarship right now in the U.S. for U.S. students age 17 to 24. If you are a current student at a U.S. college or university between 17 and 24 at the time of submission, which I believe is in February, you have no rights to the submitted work may have been assigned to a major label or a publisher. So, like, this has to be your own independent music, and you can't have won a John Lennon scholarship before. So those are your eligibility requirements. Go apply for this. It's at bmifoundation.org. And it gives you money. essentially, it gives you money for scholarships. More than $360,000 in scholarships have been awarded over the last 17 years. So it's definitely a cool thing to look into if you are a songwriter. So BMIFoundation.org. If you are in the U.S. and a songwriter, don't miss out on this opportunity. It's very cool. So I just really wanted to pass that on to you as well. Okay, I think we're good. I can stop rambling now. Holiday episode will be a back to normal, but right now we are going to get into another Coda episode, which is always very cool. Now, Husky in Denial, it goes by the name of Buck Riley. He's a 25-year-old writer and musician, a graduate of the University of Memphis, which is down in Tennessee, home of FangCon, and I'll just slip this in here. I am musical guest of honor at FangCon next year, so I will be seeing good old Husky in Denial, and I think we're going to try to do a show together. We're going to see how that works out. As you will hear in this interview, and I don't think I do a very good job of trying to be separate and not be kind of fanboyish, but somehow we both have a lot in common, and I did not realize how much. Even just the fact that he lists his influences are diverse as R.E.M., Beethoven, and my big influences when I was a kid were R.E.M. and Beethoven as well. It's crazy. But you'll get to hear now an interview with Husky in Denial, whose new album, Kung Fu, the EP, has just come out and has made my list, my official list, the one I publish at work on our blog. It's not only got a song, which is one of my favorite songs of the year, but his album, his EP, is also going to be on my albums of the year list. The only furry that made that list. So I was quite impressed with this EP, the Kung Fu EP. And here's the conversation we had just before it was released. This is Rue chatting with Husky in Denial here on this CODA episode of Fuzzy Notes.
Oh my God, I think I'm having a max attack. Yeah, I guess I am.
Okay, I think I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
All right.
Excellent. How are you doing?
Doing all right. How about you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. It was a circus trying to get this set up for some reason today. It's always a bit chaotic. Rudio is just basically, it used to be somebody's bedroom. And when they moved out, I converted it. Yeah. And you'd think that would mean I have an entire room of space to do stuff in. But since I own a lot of clutter, there's not much space to do shit in. So...
Man, I feel you. Tonight was a clusterfuck on my end, too. Had another CD release party.
Oh, cool.
Forgot everything. I forgot the cords to the speakers. I left my gearbox at home.
What?
It went okay, though.
Okay, that's good.
I just played things acoustically without any loops, and then I played through the speakers really easily. So it went okay. I had a good time.
And where was it?
It was at our local Gay and Lesbian Community Center, MGLCC, Memphis Gay Lesbian Community Center.
Cool. Cool. And it was like a advertised event kind of a thing, or just friends and family?
Mostly friends and family, but also a few people I didn't know.
Nice.
Yeah. So I put some flyers up at the actual place there, and a few people came.
Well, that's, you know what? I always say, like, if one person comes...
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's awesome, because that one person took time out of their life to pay attention to you.
Mm-hmm.
And especially these days, you know, it's hard to get people out. So,
well, you know, I sold everyone that came bought a CD. So that worked for me.
That's amazing.
The way to go.
Yes, totally. So that's at Memphis. You went to the University of Memphis, right?
I did.
Cool. And what did you take there?
I graduated with honors magna cum laude. The major in creative writing and a minor in sociology and Japanese.
Holy crap. And I assume that all kind of works into your songwriting in one way or another.
100%. Absolutely.
Yeah, cool. We'll get back to that. That will be cool to discuss. But tell us, introduce yourself. People who are listening right now to the podcast already know who you are because we've featured you, but also because your name's probably in the title. But let's pretend that this is a mystery podcast and just tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Buck Riley. I go, I perform under Husky in Denial. I do solo music under that name, and I also do music for The Bedfellows, which is a web cartoon online that hopefully some of you are familiar with.
I think most people are, probably.
You'd be surprised.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is Buck Riley your real name?
For all intents and purposes.
Okay, cool. Because I was going to actually say, you know, Buck Riley on its own is an awesome furry name. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, cool. So I was going to just sort of start at the beginning and ask you to tell me about... We're not going to do the biographical crap, you know, mm-hmm. about the street you grew up on or anything like that. But just tell me about sort of your first memory of music, like when you think back where music kind of came into your life and it like turned on a switch in your head.
Oh, man, I've been doing music since I was really little. I've always had that sort of inclination, even though I wasn't always very good at it. My mom used to tell me that I would like make up something on the piano, and then all of her friends at the theater, because my mom went to the U of M too in the theater department, and there was pianos in the stage places. So I go up and play something on piano, and they all go, "Woo, play it again!" And then I actually play it again, which I don't quite remember, but apparently I was writing songs even that far back.
So you were making it up on the fly and then replaying the same thing?
Yeah.
Okay, and how young would you have been?
Oh, like three.
Three. So you were, that was 100% ear training, just your brain was connecting the dots.
Yes. I don't want to lead anyone to think that I was a prodigy or anything.
No. But like, I think
had
just
a sense of music.
Yeah, and it's not even necessarily a prodigy thing. I think just some kids, like I've always used the connection when I tell people I find pianos so much easier than guitar, mm-hmm. because with guitar it's sort of like patterns and geometry, but with piano, if you go to the left the notes get lower, and when you go to the right the notes get higher, and they're all kind of sitting in front of you, mm-hmm. so it's like the music is there in front of you, so you just have to pick where you're gonna go, and that's why I think kids pick up piano so well, because it's such an easy connection to make.
Yes,
and
definitely.
And in general, just music and harmony is natural. You're going to know if something sounds wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's cool. So that's sort of your first, that's your first memory of playing music. Who are your first influences, aside from, you know, like whatever, the Wiggles or whatever, just like your first influences.
The Wiggles. I'm not that young. The Wiggles came way after me.
Oh, really?
Yes. The Wiggles came when I was already past that age.
Okay, same here.
First influences, my mom listened to R.E.M. My mom's favorite band was R.E.M. She listened to Cat Stevens, Elton John. I listened to a little bit of Beethoven because, you know, mm-hmm. those are the types of things I had. But I think what really started shaping the music that I do right now, I mean, I'm influenced by everything.
Yeah.
I think I guess the first band I can cite would probably be Incubus.
Interesting.
Yes. My little cousin sort of introduced me to Make Yourself after it came out. And it was right when they got really popular with Drive.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that album, I was just listening to it the other
Automatic day. For the People.
Well, that's R.E.M.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you were... Oh, Incubus, sorry. That's so funny. Two Drives.
Oh, yeah.
<'Cause>, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Automatic for the People. Yeah, that was my first. I think that's the first CD I ever owned was Automatic for the People. Actually, it was a yellow tape, and it ruined every tape player I put it in. But I played it in every tape player I could find and just ruined them.
It's worth it.
It's a great album.
Automatic is worth destroying equipment. But yeah, Incubus. So
the whole album is about, you know, making yourself, thinking for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, exploring different things, resist, unlearn, defy is like the big thing in the last song.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that had a huge impact on me, not just musically, but also just in general.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great song for a teenager. It was all about, you know, resisting peer pressure and things like that and doing the right thing and hoping life would take you in the right place. And that resonated with me and stuck with me for a long time.
And do you feel something like that, you're pursuing music because of the connection you can make with people? Or what sort of the inspiration you get from wanting to make music yourself?
That's a good question. I do want to connect with people. I want to do something sort of worth doing, I guess,
mm-hmm.
that people will appreciate. I want to kind of affect people's lives in some way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And music is just the easiest way for me to do that.
Okay, cool. So that was high school years, I guess.
Yeah, high school is when I started getting really serious about stuff.
Cool. And did you write and perform and stuff back then, too?
Yes. My first band, well, it's a toss-up of which band was technically first. I had a band called Clovis, which was just the first person I got actually started performing with. His name was Jack Cates, and he introduced me to the Pixies and to Brazilian Girls. Yeah, some good stuff.
Pixies are one of my all-time favorites.
Likewise. They are also a huge influence on me. They just didn't come first.
Yeah.
The other band that was my big high school band was Controlled Substance, and that lasted all the way through college. So with Controlled Substance, it was my childhood friend. I've known the guitarist. His name was Ping.
Nice.
He's still playing guitar. I've known him since I was second grade.
Hmm.
We bonded over Michael Jackson, of all things. Music. I listened to all kinds of crazy stuff.
No, that's amazing.
But anyway, we would.
Yeah.
We finally got a band together with a bunch of friends. We went through several different iterations, and then after college, we made an EP. We were trying to make an album to sell for this big trip we were going to take to RCFM, actually.
Hmm.
And in the process of that, things fell apart. And after that, I was really depressed, and I kind of went, you know, I have to prove to myself that I can actually do music, because there was this kind of resistance. Like, he's clearly the most talented, or I can't say the most talented, he's the most skilled of the both of us. Mm-hmm. He is very talented, but he has the diligence to put in the time and effort and to develop the skill. And so he was obviously like leagues ahead of me as a guitarist. And so there was a lot of pressure on me at that time to prove that I was a worthy musician. So that's mm-hmm. when I started actually making stuff myself, you know, recording with my computer, starting to produce music, and trying to figure out where I wanted to go with the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. And that would have been after high school, or were you still in high school?
It was the summer after freshman year of college.
Okay. So tell me the story, like, tell me the steps when the band Controlled Substance, when that kind of stopped. I'm noticing an interesting pattern, and I'll get to it
mm-hmm.
afterwards. But when the band broke up and you were sort of trying to find, I guess, for lack of a better term, your voice and figure out how to make music yourself, what steps did you take, like, to get to the point where you were recording and you felt, okay, I'm comfortable or confident with this?
Hmm. Well, the first thing I started with was GarageBand. Which, you know, was the first thing I was like, oh, look at this thing that I can do. This is great. And then someone was like, GarageBand is chump change. Try Fruity Loops. So I got Fruity Loops, and I was like, oh, this is so great. And I learned a little bit more about what I was doing, because Fruity Loops has a slightly more, I don't know if it was advanced, but it had a lot more options as far mm-hmm. as synths and stuffs go.
Mm-hmm.
After that, my friend Danny was like, I have this person who needs someone to write music for video games. And so I started doing that. And that's probably where I started really maturing with the whole recording things myself and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is trying to write music for them. And that's when I started doing less of, you know, what do I want to hear myself do? And more like, what can I do? What can I do for other people?
Yeah.
And that really opened up a whole lot of stuff. And I got into Reason, which is the one I still use now. At the time, they had just put out Record, which was now integrated into Reason. And that's where everything really kind of took off. I'm still learning, really, about EQing. I'm still learning about mastering.
Both are, I consider EQing and mastering, they aren't technical. They're more of an art form.
Really?
Yeah.
It's really, like, EQing so hard.
Yes. Well, and people
that out.
It's there. I've heard a lot of people refer to, like, EQing and even mastering as like, oh yeah, I know how to do that. That's easy. I'm like, well, you obviously probably don't actually know what you're doing.
Mastering itself is not a complicated process. It's a delicate process.
It's delicate, and it also depends what you're mastering for.
Because
mm-hmm. if you're mastering for MP3, for CD, for vinyl, for use in a film, for broadcast, like, they're all different, and that's mm-hmm. where the geniuses step in that are just amazing at it.
Yeah, I won't even say that I'm a genius at all. I'm not there yet, but I can make a track sound good
mm-hmm.
for most things at this point. But there came a point where I was like, okay, I think I'm good enough at this that I can make an album. And so I did.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first one. It's Too Late, or so I'm told.
And that's 2011?
2011. Yep. The very end. I was working on that for like a year or two, though. The first song I made for it, I think was 2 years before. It was Mars Stars was the first one I recorded. And then I did Mars Stars. I started recording 42. And then I pretty much did all of Transcend in a week. Transcend just fell together and it was brilliant. It was beautiful. I love it.
That's cool. I love those moments.
It just kind of was there. Mars Stars, I like re-recorded like 8 times. And 42, I recorded like 8 times. They went through the most tumbling and fumbling throughout the whole recording process because they were the first ones.
I'm actually curious. Just we'll come back to the album. Now you were talking about the sort of the technical advances going from GarageBand to Fruity Loops and on. As you're going through that process, how did that affect your songwriting? I'm actually kind of interested in how you solo differ from Controlled Substance or your first band.
That is a good question. What happened is that over the course of the time, it stopped being, how can I play this live? And more like, okay, I'm going to write a riff, practice for an hour, record it, and then I'll forget it. But there it is, record it, so I don't have to remember it anymore. So that is something that I've been trying to work on, but it is definitely a part of the writing process at this point. So the more technology I have, the more I can just kind of go, okay, I want to hear this, I'll make it, and that's that. I don't ever have to play that live anyway, so I'll just move on.
Okay, yeah, I get it. That makes sense.
But it always still usually starts with a riff, like a guitar riff. I'll play some chords, and I'll be like, okay, I like this chord progression, so I'll record it, and then I'll set it to a click track, and then make a whole bunch of stuff on top of it, and then go from there. But with the more technology I have now, I can also start from nothing. On the new album, the last song was just like, okay, I know I want to do something with some chip tunes, so I played around with my keyboard and put stuff together, and then I went back and was like, okay, so here's how the song's going to build from there.
So it's a bit in reverse of your usual system.
Yes, it started digital before analog. I know that I usually don't write words first. Usually the music comes first and then the words come later. And that has not changed. Words are usually the last thing I do.
And for your lyrics, is it, I'm not going to try to guess. What is your system for writing lyrics? If you were to take us through the process, the music's already been written. You have this instrumental track and you're loving it. How then do you put words on top of that?
Sometimes it's really hard. Sometimes I know what I want to write about. And lately, as I feel that I've matured in my writing, I usually scrap whatever I did first. So write something, and then I'll be like, okay, I got to put this away. I'll put it down. Eventually I'll come back to it and be like, this is total shit. This sucks. Let me take what I like about it and try and move it back around. It's a huge editing process. I used to be able to sit down, write something out, and be like, I'm good with that. But I think I'm benefiting from this now. I can't do that anymore. I look at it and I'm like, no, this could be better, and here's how it could be better. So with the last album, the middle song in started, man, oh my God, that one went through so many changes. I didn't know what I wanted to do with it. So I started with this sort of scene of homeless people in a church. That the church wouldn't, you know, help them. But I couldn't get anywhere with it, with the rhythm that I had set up. And it was just sort of lackluster. So I stopped and I said, okay. I took some of my favorite phrases and said, okay, this is now werewolves, but he's trying to resist becoming one. And then I was like, that is completely opposite of what I ever talk about. It all of my stuff is all about embracing the wild and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
So I turned it back around to something like that, and I was like, this is good, this will work. And then while I was singing it, I was like, I'm gonna change this word real quick.
So you kind of, it's almost like you have a little foundation, you build on top of it. Okay, that's interesting.
And I often and basically I usually end up with something completely different from what I started with.
Cool. And obviously you prefer the end result. Do you ever have regrets and think back to an earlier version and prefer that, or?
No.
That's a good thing.
The early version to think that shit sucked.
That's a good thing.
So much better.
So, I guess back to your first album, when you recorded it, what were you sort of trying to achieve? What was your goal when you sat down and decided I'm going to record an album?
That's a good question. I had a theme. Mm-hmm. It's Too Late, or so I'm told, which had a couple of different meanings. Mm-hmm. The main one, and you'll see it in the artwork and everything, I have a sort of an obsession with the end of the world and the process of the apocalypse and what it could be. And that's something I had been writing about a lot, so I wanted to do that. It didn't end up getting incorporated as much as I wanted it to, but it's there. There's sort of a in time sort of vibe. The other thing is, with the name of the album, and you'll actually hear this on the EP too, I mentioned it. Someone, Ping and I, because we were in Controlled Substance, we used to hang out at this coffee shop, and the guy there was like, "You guys, you're 18 now. Y'all are too old. You've missed the bus. You can't be famous rock stars. You should have started when you were like 15 and gotten discovered at that point. So it's too late for you. You're never going to be a famous rock star. You can be a musician all you want, but you're never going to go anywhere with it." And I was like, that is not cool, man. You can't just go tell people that. Fuck you.
Well, and who was telling you this? Just a random or?
Oh, it was a guy that used to frequent there. I want to say he had some experience with the industry, but
yeah, I was going to ask, did they have any kind of experience or knowledge to?
I want to say he did, because he was like, you know, if you were to give me $100,000 and a song, I could put that shit on the radio and it would be a number one hit.
Okay. So he didn't have any experience, but he thought he did.
I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting. But, how did that make you feel?
I have a defiant streak, so when someone tells me I can't do something, I'm like, fuck you, I can do whatever I want. it can get me in trouble, but...
So, and this is before you recorded the album?
This is way before I recorded the album. This is with Controlled Substance.
Yeah. But
it's always stuck with me as something that someone said to me, and I was like, no. And I remember, like, going back and looking at some of my favorite bands, and the one that stood out was System of a Down. I was like, Serge Tankian is, like, 40 years old. Mm-hmm. What's up with that? Some of the other people in the band were in their 20s, but he was way older. I was like, if he can make it at that age, because they didn't really explode until Toxicity came out.
No, that's true.
Not too much earlier. He was still in his 30s by the time that came out. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, look at that. I don't think there's an age limit. I think that things can happen spontaneously. Mm-hmm. And I think when it's manufactured, you have to start young. Because a lot of the bands I was looking at, yes, they did actually start really, really young.
But they were put together by some kind of think tank, essentially.
A lot of times informed, yeah. It's that way. And then there's the band The Hush Sound that were discovered by the guy from Fall Out Boy, who we really liked. Mm-hmm. And they were still in high school. They were touring when they were 16. And that was like, that's so rough. I wouldn't ever want to do that. But I did have this sort of sense, like, what if I have missed the boat? Mm-hmm. But I decided, what good is it to think that I've missed the boat? How is that going to help me?
Yeah, exactly. It's just a wall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So with the first album.
Yeah, it was a defiance of that. And I also wanted to put together something that was interesting to listen to. That's usually my goal.
And you were, I've already gathered, you were heavy, or at least... somehow involved in furry at this point.
Super. I have called myself a furry since I was 14. Mm-hmm. I'd say it goes way further than that, but that's when I found out what they were.
Yeah, totally. The feeling, but it's before you have a know of the community that actually put the label on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, that was a sort of a conflict within Controlled Substances. I was a furry, and I was always bringing that influence in. The other people weren't really. Some of them were like, sort of like, okay, I mean, that's cool and whatever. But there was always like, but are we a furry band? We don't really want to do that. I was like, we don't have to be a furry band, but I like this imagery.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But yes, and, definitely was a furry by that time.
And that inspired the writing of the first album. So after the band broke up and you started writing the album, how much furry was sort of in your life at that time? And how much of that sort of colored the music you were making, if at all?
At that time, that is a good question. I think at that time, there was not as much furry as there is now, but there was still, it was a growing at the time that I put it out by a good amount. That's when I was starting to do conventions and stuff, like really starting to do conventions, like being a regular at a convention. It was a thing that I was starting to do. That was kind of cool. And I like to sneak it in there. I think a lot of my thing, like the first song, there was a couple songs on there actually that deal directly with the dichotomy with being human and furry. Mars Stars has a lot of that. Like the line is, if dogs hail from Jupiter, then I'm undoubtedly from Mars. And that's a reference to two things. One, dogs are from Jupiter. It's from Rugrats. That's just the thing. It always stuck to me. The dogs are from Jupiter. Like, of course they are. And of course, men are from Mars.
Yes. And so, interesting. Cool.
So that's where that came from. And then, of course, the first song is about, kind of defines what the name Husky in Denial is about. The dichotomy of wild and domesticated and wanting to reach out for something wild and, you know, dealing with the fact that you are totally a domesticated city pooch. You're no wolf.
Do you find that kind of conflict in your head, whether it's like allegorical or something in your own life?
Definitely. I tend to have affinity for the idea of chaos as opposed to order. But I'm autistic myself, and there's a real love for things that are orderly and organized and patterns, and you know, this is how my day goes, and that's good. Don't really like too much change in the routine. But at the same time, there's like, you know, the wild and chaos and, you know, spontaneity is something that I cherish. But it's not really a significant part of who I am. So it's kind of reconciling between those two things.
Mm-hmm. But that kind of comes out in both being a furry and being a musician.
Definitely. I think my music is... You know, the interesting thing about, I think, about ordering chaos is that one man's order is another man's chaos.
Mm-hmm.
Music is a great place to explore that because music is all order. That's all music is ordered and patterned sounds, and yet we can create chaos out of that, or what sounds chaotic using that ordered pattern. Or, you know, depending on who's listening. God forbid anyone from the 1700s listen to a pop song now. Sure, that freaked them the hell out.
But it's interesting also, because like music, like you say, it's order no matter how you put it together. I guess if you just mashed keys, it might be chaos. But two examples that I kind of opened my eyes to how strange music is, how it kind of sits in this weird netherworld, is one is when I realized that the only kind of music that I can't figure out, and not like figure out as in like, do I like it or don't like it, but it's so complex. Mm-hmm. I look at it, I'm like, holy crap, there's something going on here that I just can't grasp, is essentially like death metal or the metal where the timing is so messed up, but the band is so tight.
You mean like math metal?
Like math metal, but like I've gone to see shows where like with like Meshuggah, I saw them live. And they did some crazy, like the timing, it seemed like every bar was a different time, but everything was in perfect sync. And I'm like, there's something going on there that I just can't figure out. And the other thing where I realize that music is just absolutely amazing is Nirvana. I think it's Lithium, the song Lithium. Sort of a loud, angry song when you hear the Nirvana version. But then I saw, I believe it was Daniel Lanois or somebody talking about how beautiful the song was. And he played the chord progression on a piano. And then you listen to that, you're like, hidden in all that noise is this incredibly complex chord progression that you could never have made up. Like, you have to be a genius to make it up.
Yeah, but you know, if you listen, people were kind of mind blown when they did their Unplugged set too, because it was like, where did all these folk songs come from? What is this?
And that's when you realize the bass, like the song is so powerful because it can change. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be the same song, but each song can be different depending who's interpreting it.
Oh yeah, definitely. I was going to say the stuff that weirds me out, or not weirds me out, but I haven't quite figured out how to grasp is King music. Japanese traditional gagaku.
Okay.
It's so completely foreign having been raised on Western music because it doesn't rely on Western music traditions. It's more about pauses and space.
Huh.
And there's not like, you couldn't write it down in Western musical terms. You couldn't use a staff and try and do that with it because it's like if you... Are you familiar with Kabuki?
Yeah, totally.
That stuff.
Okay.
There is an order and a pattern to it, but it's not anything that... I mean, I'm sure if I studied it, I might be able to do something with it, but my Western music background cannot grasp it at all because it is not anything like what we do.
Well, and similar to that is like the Indian music with the sitar where... It's very structured, but to Western ears, it sounds kind of like a mess. But then it's amazing because it's like Bach. It's so incredibly structured.
Oh yeah,
and it's mathematical.
Like, I actually got to look into some of that stuff, and it is. It's very strange. It almost seems a little limiting, but I guess if you were to go look at Bach, I mean, certainly back then it was probably freeing, but now it'd be like, what? That's so you could do so much more.
Yeah, and it's also that whole, like, the Dogma 95 movies and stuff where you free yourself by constraining yourself. Now your mind can't go too crazy trying to figure things out because you have these restrictions you have to work with. Mm-hmm. You have to be creative within those restrictions. Just like low-budget movie makers, you have $1,000 and a bunch of bad actors, and you have to make a movie, so you go creative.
Yeah. There's totally some genius to be had there. It's just hard to – I was just saying it's like relative to the palette that we have now. It's very restrictive. We've opened up our musical palette and Western styles immensely. Mm-hmm. I think now – I don't really know much about it, but now we're instead of doing a 12-note, you know, chromatic thing, it's more like, okay, now we'll try it with 10 notes or 16 notes and tune pianos to 16 notes. I'm like, I don't even know what to do with this in my head.
Yeah, and I also like how people are sort of playing with instruments, like taking a bad example would be like Pot USA, how the two guitarists had five strings between them, but they made like pretty dense music. Mm-hmm. You know, like the bassist had two strings and guitarists had three strings, and that's how they played. Hello. They kind of limited themselves because they were like, I'm playing power chords and you're just playing like root notes, but it made it sound so big. I like that kind of stuff, and I like seeing people experiment with music. And speaking of experimenting with music, your last album was crazy good.
Thank you.
It was crazy good, and I have some questions about it before we get into more deep stuff, because we went off your story and into the story of music.
Send you flying out against the gale. Once
Hey, everybody, and unfortunately, you're going to have to wait to hear the rest of this interview because it went for 2 hours. So the first half was kind of waxing poetic about music, and we're going to get into more about Husky's music when we come back from our holiday break. And yeah, the song you just heard is K, not to be mistaken with K. Very cool story coming up about the fact that Husky in Denial has two songs called K. This is K, Q-U-E, from his album Kung Fu, which is available at huskyindenial.bandcamp.com. His new album that I'm about to ramble excitedly about, it was included on my best albums, and this song, K, was included on my best songs of the year list, and faux show, you're going to hear an awesome conversation finishing up with Husky in the next Coda episode of Fuzzy Notes. So have a happy holiday. Why would I even say that? Because there's one more episode of Fuzzy Notes coming out. Dumb. I'm going to head out now, and hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll be seeing you soon. Whoop.